country. They migrated from countries that were so poor that they couldn't feed themselves there. So what they did was they sold themselves basically to the people that brought them over to this country. And then they had to pay that back as a debt. Well, basically they came over and then they worked as sharecroppers or some kind of farmers or some kind of laborers. That and they worked for free, basically. They worked for food and poor shelter, and then everything else that they made profit-wise went back to the people that brought them over here. So, and it's the same thing with the people coming up from Central America, the kids and all that sort of thing. They're talking about the immigrants coming in, and what do they have to gain from being here? Well, it's not what they have to gain, it's what they have to lose. They have put in everything that they can possibly gather together their whole families to send one or two people up to the United States. But for the first probably 10 years that they're over the border and illegally, they are making just enough money to pay back the people that got them there, you know, and therefore they really don't have money to send back. But then if they're lucky enough to dodge the immigration people for over that period of time, then they start sending a little bit of money back to their parents or their families down south of the border. And that's their goal, is a lifetime of servitude for the ability to be able to send a little bit, a little pittance of something back down to their families in Central and South America. And this is the thing, is that money and those jobs are drying up fast, or the competition is fierce for them, and so it's a catch as catch kind of thing. And there's going to be weeks, months, if not years, where you're going to be basically half starving to death and living, you know, in subpar kind of housing, just for the sake of that idea, the hope, the dream that you can make something good happen out of the whole thing, but it's a rigged game. Let's put it that way.
Thank you. We're speaking with Michael S. True, an activist, orator, and musician and artist from New Orleans. Mike, I'm going to play a little of your soundscape background, and we'll take a break. And you tuned in to 101.3 FM Free Radio Santa Cruz, freakradio.org. Please get in touch with us. Here's a little music. All this time I had it queued up and it wasn't even the right CD. We're going to get there though. Mike, you've put out how much music now? You don't have to.
I'm actually working on my seventh album. And of course they're all self-produced under the True Energy Sound Productions label. I have an album of kids songs. I have an album of synthesized music called Sonic Seasons. I have 1, 2, 3 albums from the Phantom Band, and then two more, and then I'm working on an album even as we speak.
Okay, because I had it here. It just was one of those days. Here's some. What did you call it? Sonic Seasons, right?
It's Sonic Seasonings. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm. All right. That wasn't it, was it?
That wasn't it.
So funny. Says it is. It's got the label on the CD.
Yeah.
Let me look at this again. You know what? You don't want to know. But if you can put two CDs in at once, and only one will play.
Okay. Technology, we love it. We love it. Yeah.
Yours was on top.
here.
There.
There you go.
You could talk about this over it if you want, or you can talk about other things, but how loud is that in your ear? Oops.
Yeah, these are songs that I did on synthesizers during the 80s, mid to late 80s.
Oh, well. I mean, fun. That's like, reminding me of China or something. I don't know why.
Well, this is called Port-A-Call, I think, if I remember right. And you think about being in other places as you travel by boat from here to there, I think. That was kind of the inspiration.
So, if you tuned in now, yeah, we're talking. Mike has a lot of music that he's written with words as well. But do you have anything you want to say more about this?
Music is good. Music is the way to get to speak to people's minds and hearts. And everybody that makes music should make more.
Okay. I agree.
Make more music. Make more music.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking that quote that I originally was talking to you about, and if you're just tuning in, we were speaking about free will when so the start of it was, I don't know when the start of it was. I guess because since fire began, I don't know. Since people were alive, they thought they had free will, right?
That's it.
And
but you gotta pay attention to what's going on around you. You're reacting. We've become a reactionary people as opposed to a proactive. We used to go out and hunt and collect things to eat and that sort of thing. Whereas now. We wait for something to happen, and then we react to that. We wait for a job opening, and then we have to do whatever the job opening requires us to do if we get the job. But it's an after-the-fact thing, and that allows for other people to get in there and control the situation, which we don't want to see, but is really the reality of it. There's somebody out there that's making that system work, and we're just playing into their hands primarily, and to get away from that, you'd have to go to like the jungles of South America or someplace, you know, where it's more a natural setting. And I wish we could get back to a more natural state of being. I don't think we'll ever quite hit the Garden of Eden, but if people started owning land and actually farming little 1 acre plots or whatever, and becoming self-sufficient, that would be a better way to go, and you would feel like you would probably be more acting on your own personal free will at that point, as opposed to.
I can make a slight comparison of that to that. I recently was able to visit a eco village that was set with a lot of farmlands on it. There was 300 acre piece of land. And one of the Forbes has bought this piece of land and decided instead of living in a castle by himself somewhere, that he would share it with people that he thought deserved to, you know, be there, and gave through a lengthy an interview or process, I don't know, they have a collective of that. Would allow families to move there and use it, and so you could have your own little section of it and your partial community, and maybe you were better at growing food, or maybe you were a mechanic, or maybe you're, you know,
that's right.
Helping
that's
like
right.
that. So there's animals there, and there was their natural water system. Anyway, the set up that way. So that was the closest to the Garden of Eden I've seen. And it was set in the hills in near, well, I could say Sebastopol, California, where they could grow grapes, they could do all the kinds of anything, but I didn't see too much industry there. Just what I mean, I didn't see a way that they could have polluted it, could have done anything other than live on the Garden of Eden and exactly that, just have like their own economy and their own way of dealing with everything. So I mean, so they were able to communicate. There are about 50 people that live on all this land.
Yeah.
In it.
And I was listening to one of your pre-recorded shows a week or so ago, and there was a guy on there saying, and I'm sorry, I'm so bad at names, but there was a guy on there saying that he was originally into anarchy and the whole idea that not that there wouldn't be any kind of a system, but there wouldn't be any one person who was in a position to dictate things about that system. In other words, there's no leaders. It's all Indians and no chiefs kind of thing, right?
Okay.
And he was saying that was all well and good until you got to the point where you had over 200 people, and then it wasn't manageable anymore. And so the communal settings that we saw in the 60s with the hippie movement and all that sort of thing were generally small groups that had gone out and taken over farms or ranches or whatever and worked them. And then the people within that group could decide what they wanted to do as a part of making that system work. In other words, like you said, if they had mechanical abilities, they did stuff like fix up the tractors or whatever. If they had the ability to grow the food or even cook the food and so on and so forth. So everybody had the potential for finding their own niche in that little microsystem. But to do that on a grand scale, like saying the whole United States should be, you know, just should throw away all of its leaders and we should just be doing all this stuff, doesn't quite work as well. But if you have hundreds of thousands of these little communal farms, that would be okay. But each one becomes kind of a city-state then, becomes its own self-contained entity. And that changes the whole condition of the government for sure. If you could do that, that would change a lot of things. People would actually be a lot happier, I'm sure, knowing that they were doing what they wanted to do in a place that they wanted to do it. But we have to slice and dice the country up and put it back together in a whole different way.
Yeah, and that wasn't perfectly set up yet, but some of them understood the vision and some were just being how they always were, but in a privater, more relaxed setting, so they weren't seen and didn't have all the, I don't know how much pressure they would have, but of course you could use your cell phone there and you were connected to the outside world at large, but it's in a consciousness has to be developed and inside of there so that everybody can work together. It wasn't as ideal as the guy who set it up was. It hadn't arrived to where everybody was supporting his vision. Only a few people, a handful maybe.
Right.
Made him feel like maybe I don't want to even live here. I'll just take my, move somewhere else. Or
yeah,
if everybody did cooperate, he might be inclined to donate or... if he died, give the land to them or let them buy it. But one of the members is concerned that this could change within by the fact that not enough people were seeing that grander vision enough where he wanted to keep it going as it started or sell it. You know, that's 300 acres. Wow.
Yeah, this is where in the poem I read in the very beginning there, play on, the last verse of this is, thus we are blinded to the lessons of a more distant past, predisposed to reject valid historical facts. a society in chaos, persuaded to cling fast to the status quo and play on. And the whole meaning in that whole thing was that, was kind of what you're getting at. If we came into this situation with a clean slate, if we didn't have any memory recall of what was happening right now in terms of our society, and could make our society into something that we wanted to make it, it would be easier for people to choose to do the things that they are comfortable doing and to learn the skills that they want to learn, whereas we're now so hardwired into the status quo of what is, that if you took people and you took them out to a farm and you said, okay, do this, do this, do this, they're going to look at, okay, well, yeah, I had that, but I didn't have this, and I had this, and I didn't have that. I can't play my video games now, or I can't go shopping down at my favorite shopping store or whatever. And so you have all these distractions that come into the picture that wouldn't have been there if you'd have gone back 200 years, even 100 years, would have been totally different. If you were born on a farm, then you grew up as a farmer, you know, and you're probably, your grandparents were still on that same farm. You might be in a different house on it, but it's going to be, they did the same things that you're going to do, that you're going to pass on to your children to do, that they're going to pass on to their children to do. And it was very agrarian. In terms of, you raised the food that you needed to have to survive, to eat, you know, and made enough that maybe you could share it with the neighbors and either trade it for other things that you didn't have, or some other bartering arrangement to.
That does go on.
Yeah, and we don't see that anymore. We don't see that as a reality anymore at all. You go online, you order something on the internet, you put it on your credit card, you know? I mean, it's like we can't get away from the knowledge that we have now that we think makes life easier. And it doesn't make life easier. It makes us subjugated to other people's whims at any given point in time.
That's a good point. To look at it as it is in that way, in that light, as it actually is, it's hard to confront that it's actually not what we think it is.
Exactly. Which is why it would make it easier if you went to a whole another different country or like an area where it didn't have any of the things that we have up here to start with, so that you were starting from scratch. If you go down to the Amazon and try and use your credit card to survive down there, I don't think you'd survive very long, so.
Survive, yeah.
Yeah. You have to figure out what to eat and what not to eat, because you could poison yourself real easy, and you didn't know what you were doing. But you'd have to get really real, you know, down to what is there in front of you, and living with that on a day-to-day basis, just like the people that are native to that area would have to do. So, but...
Yeah.
Again, We're not pushing into that.
We're not far from that.
Right.
We don't know how close it could be.
Yeah.
Talk about kind of a future science fiction reality, maybe closer than we think, kind of movie. I saw this one the other night called Snowpiercer.
Okay.
Piercer, where everyone lives on a train. I can't tell you all about it, except you got to see it. Because they're all they do is ride through the snow. And there's definitely class systems going on there.
Okay.
It's a shocking look at how you related the medieval system, you know, how. And they had no memory of what their life on Earth had been before all this happened. It was sort of, they're on Earth, but they don't remember what it looked like. Except a couple of people, they found some dirt under the snow at one point.
Cool.
Very good movie. If you get it, it's probably through Netflix. Snow, S-N-O-W, Piercer, P-I-E-R-C-I-N-G, P-E-R, Piercer.
Piercer, okay. Cool.
It's easy to deny the reality, but we do it in all these ways that make it even go further, out of control. We cope with it by not really handling it, just allowing more of it to happen. Depending. Some people use violence, some people use drugs, some use art, some go into politics. I'm not going anywhere with this, except there's a definite system at hand that we are, depending where we are on that system, either somewhere above or below someone else.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the only thing that's going to change this is if we change it at a grassroots level. That's what I'm getting at. If you look around you in your community, in your neighborhood, on your corner, and you do things and interact with the people that are around you at that level and try and make that the best of all worlds, then you can... That will permeate out and further out and further out and further out from you. But if you try to change things by changing things at the top, so to speak, and you're going to get real frustrated real quick, because we don't really have that kind of control anymore. It's more about what we believe in, and in terms of if we're going to be positive towards our future and think good things about what the possibilities may be. It has to be you believing in yourself and the people right around in your immediate vicinity, and working with those people to make that little part of the world a better place. That's kind of how I see it. I don't know how much time we have here, but
if you want to talk a little more, I wanted to take a break. Otherwise, I wanted to thank Michael Tree. We've been speaking with him. I'm going to ask him to stay on the line, and then we'll talk about that more if we can.
Cool.
Okay. Okay, we got Michael. What's this poem you want to read?
Okay, I thought I'd finish out by doing something a little bit more positive. And this poem is called Believing In, and let me read it. I was never good about pretending. Even as a child, I was more about believing in a wishing star, a coin to toss, a fervent prayer to God. Always looking for a way to change the very nature of my world, ever searching for some key, some lucky charm to offer up some hope. What I needed was a genie, a magic spell, or a tattered treasure map, a beacon I can follow, an arrow pointing down a sure and even path. And for my part, a tale to write, a story left to share, a marker that might shed some light on others who are struggling so they might find the means to change, a way from there to here. Pretending never offered this, no chance for love, no shield from harm, no guarantee of happy home, while believing is a doing thing, an act on faith, a chosen quest to make it so. And it matters not what method used, as long as heart and head agree, if you want to believe in a better life, you first must take the leap.
What do you think of that poem right now?
Well, we're all looking for answers, that's for sure. And I think a lot of the answers have to do with our own actions, what we choose to believe and how we want to go forward from here. And I would encourage everybody to think about people around them as much as themselves, because that will make the difference. It's not just about who you are and what you want. It's about what we are as a race, as a people, as a nation, you know. And so we need to believe in some stuff that helps us move forward in that context. So there you have it.
Very good, very good.
From New Orleans, Louisiana. And thanks, Carl, for having me on.
Well, glad you could join us. I know you have other places to be. Thank you again, and I'm going to say probably bye a little bit off the air. But I'm going to play, as he leaves, something I don't know what it's all about. It's called New Orleans Social Club. See what it is.
Social Club.